So me and my Dutch friend, we put a fish, like an unfried fish, a raw fish, in the bed of our Filipino friend. It did not end well.
Hello, this is Joseph Schulz, and welcome to the Deep Culture Podcast, where we explore culture and the sciences of mind. And I am here with the podcast team, everyone with us today, recording together. We've got Ishi Terai.
Hello, everyone, from a brutally hot Tokyo. It's been a busy time, but I am so happy to get together with everyone.
And Leah is here, Tohodliana Harskarnes.
Greetings from Crete. I'm on vacation today.
And Sanne Bosma.
Yes, hello. So nice to see you all again. This is Sanne from the Netherlands, and it's very gray at the moment.
And Emre Seven.
Hello. It's great to be here, and I'm so excited that we are recording it together.
And so the title for this episode is Deep Questions. This is the last episode of Season 5. Episode number 58.
That's amazing that we have reached so far.
And so we thought it would be fun to take stock, share our thoughts about the last season, but also look into the future.
We asked some deep questions in this season, like when did culture start, and touchy topics like culture and religion.
The episode on scarcity was also touchy. Anything related to rich and poor is complicated, but it was super important for me personally. I've seen scarcity up close doing development work in the Philippines.
Scarcity was an intense episode.
The research that we found about the flower sellers in Chennai was incredible.
Sana's story about kissing the spoiled bread before throwing it away, it was just mind-blowing.
Intellectually, I think culture and evolution was the hardest topic we did this season.
Oh my goodness, it broke my brain. And Leah, you had the inspiration for the episode on love across cultures, which kind of sounds light, but it is what it was not easy.
That is true. It's because intercultural relationships are not simple, and I'm in one, so I should know that. And people have asked me several times for advice on how to be in intercultural relationships.
And do you tell them to listen to this episode?
Of course.
And so to wrap up this incredible and super diverse season, we're going to look back at the things that touched us, talk about what got us thinking deeper as a team, and we will look forward to the questions that make us want to dig deeper.
And that brings us to part one, hard questions.
So someone asked me recently, how do you guys choose your topics? And I think this is a good chance to talk about that.
So we call this the Deep Culture Podcast. So what that means for me is that we're trying to ask deep questions about human nature.
Now, when you say human nature, people don't normally think of culture, but human beings are cultural by nature. We live in a world of cultural meaning.
And these things are hard to talk about because our cultural nature is so built in to us.
And in the podcast, we ask deep questions about topics that are not usually talked about in intercultural education, like religion and scarcity, but also about common topics, which we discuss in terms of psychological experience, like how much effort does it take to connect to people in a foreign language?
Or why does your colleague ask you to count the numbers of toilets before an event? Or what is it like to feel that your partner does not really understand you?
One thing I like about working on the podcast is that we look into this incredible research about these things. And so the brainstorming is about how we can use science to give us a new perspective.
Totally. Like episode 55, Culture and Evolution. As we got into it, we came up with questions like, when did culture start, or what's the relationship between genetics and culture?
I found that episode to be profound. I had to rethink what we mean when we use the word culture. So the aha moment for me was to see culture as collaboration based on collective knowledge that builds up over time. And that's a really different perspective. Our ancestors have been teaching and learning for millions of years. Fire, cooking, hunting techniques. And so I thought, right, that's culture. Collective knowledge was our secret weapon.
The aha moment for me was the comparison we found between chimpanzees and early humans. The idea that humans work together in the way that chimpanzees simply don't. Let's listen to a clip from that episode.
You won't see two chimps work together to move a heavy object. They don't take different roles. Okay, you do this and I'll do that. And they don't improve on what they learn. So their culture doesn't evolve. Early hominids learned to collaborate. If we're out foraging and a saber-toothed cat threatens us, is it, forget you guys, I'm out of here? Or do we stand our ground as a group, maybe with sticks or stones as weapons? And collaborating and accumulating knowledge led to better group survival.
That helped me understand the relationship between culture and genetics, which always seemed really separate, because genetic evolution favored individuals that were good at cultural learning.
One of the things I learned from that episode was about prestige and its relationship to cultural learning, that we evolved to imitate high-prestige individuals. So the one who hunted the best, the people who lived the longest. And there's this connection to everyday life. That's why we buy stuff that celebrities advertise.
Also, I was interested in the research which showed that the only area of cognition that toddlers scores higher than apes was the ability to pay attention to those who know and copy them.
Yes, that's intriguing, isn't it? So it seems like straightforward questions at the beginning of the episode really takes us to places unknown.
And I think the theme of episode 50, expanding your circle of empathy, was challenging, not intellectually, but in a human way. I was fascinated by the idea that empathy is motivated. It can be turned on and off. Something else Joseph said resonated with me.
One aspect of empathy is caring about others, but the other is perspective taking, knowing how someone else looks at a situation, and that involves sharing another's mental world.
So the idea that perspective taking and caring are separate aspects of empathy really inspired me. It's not enough to turn your empathy on. Sometimes the hard part is to understand how people see things, why they do what they do. And this resonated with me because recently I started working as a coordinator at work, and I think I genuinely care about the staff there, but that doesn't mean I understand them, especially when there is a conflict. Once, in a meeting, we discussed the need to be more punctual, you know, especially during busy hours when our students need our assistance. It was a bit tense. Then after the lunch break, I saw that everyone was back at work at 1 p.m. sharp. No one was late a single minute. And I found it really great and wrote a WhatsApp message to the group as, it is 1 p.m. and everybody is back to their work on time. Thank you all for your sensitivity. But to my surprise, they were offended by this remark. I was shocked. The only intention that I had was to motivate people. But the staff here told me that they felt insulted. One guy said, we're not kids. We are grown-ups. No need to do that. This was my failure of empathy. I cared about them, but could not share their mental world. So, did I empathize? I'm not sure.
So, Emre, the staff was Turkish?
Yes, and they were around my age.
It's easy to say that we need to empathize, and you never know when you're going to bump up against these walls to empathy.
Empathy sounds good, but it's definitely hard work.
So going back to this question about how we find our topics, I think the key is that we are not trying to find hard topics. We are trying to ask deep questions.
But we also have to connect it to people's experience.
And that brings us to part two, who touched you?
One challenge making a podcast like this is that you need different perspectives.
Well, and this team is amazingly diverse. There are seven of us on the main team this season, everyone here plus Liu Liu and Rob Fritz. We're from the US, India, the Netherlands, Turkey, Norway, China, the UK. I'm sure we speak more than a dozen languages between us. But the world is a crazy diverse place, and that's just not enough.
And even with all of that, we are always looking for new voices. And I think some of the most moving segments from this season were from the people who were not on this main team.
That was really true in the religion episodes. I am not religious, and in the Netherlands, it's a bit of a taboo to bring it up. I grew up hearing rather negative things about religion, so it was really good to hear from Luan, who is a believer, and he talked about the good that religion can do in society.
Religion, in my view, plays a vital role in society by creating order and encouraging community engagement. It provides a structure for respecting and preserving the spiritual practices of those who came before us, forming a continuum of collective wisdom. Rather than constantly reinventing the wheel, religion allows us to build upon the truths already uncovered by previous generations.
Hearing how beautiful religion is for Luan helps me see religion in a new way. And I've introduced the topic of religion in my classes too. Thanks, Luan.
For me, it's similar to you, Sana. I am simply not religious. I don't have much feeling for the sacred. But I was really moved by the way that Safa spoke about her beliefs as something deeply personal.
I definitely am a believer, but I'm not religious. I may not pray 5 times a day, even when I want to, but my day doesn't start without a bismillah, and I don't sleep without a prayer. So for me, my religion is a personal relationship with my Creator. I would call it my faith more than religion. Since I was a kid, I hated how Muslims treated women. There was a time when my Quran teacher told us in class that girls should not be seen or heard. Then he added that the Prophet said that women should stay at home. I don't know what got into me. I just said, yeah, that's because he's a man. And then everyone in my family went crazy. They took it to mean that I was abusing the Prophet. I wasn't. I was stating that he could only see it through his eyes and not the eyes of a woman. Then I met someone wonderful and he asked me to read the Quran instead of listening to people. Later, when I heard the actual story from the Hadith, stories from the life of the Prophet, it wasn't the way the other teacher had told me. Every step has been a fight. There was a time when I thought my religion was a deterrent to my growth. But when I decided not to listen, I realized it wasn't religion, it was stupid bearded men.
That really resonated with me because I grew up in a religious environment, but also I don't share the religious part of it that much.
And I think listening to Luan and Safa and others in this episode was really important to understand that in the least, you are not the only one navigating these things.
And when we started planning this episode, one of the first things we realized was that something like 80% of the world's population identifies with a religion. And on this team, we did not have people to speak from that perspective. And so it was really good to share something that we just don't have on this team.
I'm also really in awe of Safa, how she finds her way whilst dealing with expectations from others. And it was also very powerful to hear different ways that religion can be part of one's life.
Well, for me, this season had so many contributors. It was tough to choose one. But if I had to, I have to say I loved Armen's contribution in episode 49.
I was living in a village nearby a big city, and it was a very informal community that we looked out after each other. So, for example, when I made an appointment with my friends to go to his house to study or to play, I start 9 o'clock walking. I was to be there at 9:30. I was on time. But if that person starts asking me some things, and they will always ask you, how are you? How is school? Are you okay? How are your parents? And it goes on to the seventh generation asking how they are. You must be respectful and stay you're on your place, and you have to ask also them, how are you, what I can help you with. And when at the time they have a grocery with them or something, then you have to help them bring them to their house. So the plans can change. So I will be there at 11 o'clock. It's okay. It's still on time. And I have helped that people.
As an Indian, it resonated with me deeply to hear him say that he views time in terms of relationships with people and community. I also want to add that Armen's contribution was, I think, one of the most spontaneous contributions of season 5. He just talks and he's just sharing. You know, he's not trying to make a point. He's not trying to prove anything. He's just sharing his perspective.
I told him yesterday that this was going to go in and that you mentioned he was very, very excited. I also told about the trip he took to Armenia recently. And said he experienced the exact same thing. So they were supposed to meet at some time. And then they went everywhere in between because plans kept on changing and they were constantly in touch with the person they were supposed to meet, who then also said that the plans were constantly changing. They had to go there and then there. So finally they met about 4 hours later or something than the original idea, which was fine.
And so for Armen, that was still fine. He has not been overly influenced by Dutch culture.
I asked him about this and he said no, he did not feel any frustration, but he did say when he would be with me, he might be more frustrated because he knows that I'm used to something different. So he would want to, you know, compensate for that.
That's a great point.
But I also asked a bit further and then what if this would happen in a work context? And he said no way. Time is money. You know, you cannot waste time. You have to be on appointments and everything. So there's an interesting difference there.
And this is the thing that we say about cultural bridge people, right? The fact that if he would be with Sane, that he would have a different reaction because he's taking into account not just the people there, but also Sane, who he knows about. That's amazing.
And so not only is he switching back and forth, but his empathy is operating because he knows how other people are going to react.
Absolutely.
Well, the person whose story I found really powerful was Rolita, and it is because she had to really make an effort to learn the language and the culture, and it came at a cost for her. And I found her story touching because of that.
Learning a language takes real effort. But here's the thing. It's all worth it. Because the real reward isn't just speaking the language, it's in the connections we make. It's in those moments when a conversation flows more naturally, when we share a laugh with someone from a completely different background, or when we suddenly see the world from a new perspective. I'm still in the middle of the journey, figuring things out as I go. Some days I feel like I'm making progress. Other days I struggle to find the right words. But maybe that's the beauty of it then, that there is always more to learn.
You have known Verlita for a while, right, Leah? And you've mentored her?
Yes, we are both part of a program where I'm her mentor in helping her find a job in Norway. She found a job already, and that's when she started to adjust to the culture and the language. And she's in a situation where she lives in the countryside of Norway alone as the only foreigner. And somehow I can relate to that because in the Philippines, I used to be the only foreigner in the group at work and among my friends. So doing that is very hard, but if you can do it, you gain a great reward. And I can see her changing. I can even see her facial expressions changing when she speaks Norwegian. And I find it amazing. But I know that she's been struggling getting there.
Wow, that is amazing.
The person whose story I found really powerful and insightful was Armen's again, because, you know, we are from cultures and countries that were seen as not exactly good together.
And so you're speaking specifically about historical tensions between between Armenia and Turkey.
But after listening to this segment, I noticed that I do share really all of his insights. It was really a powerful moment for me that how a person who was from a culture that was taught to me in a different way was something that is really close to me. So that was a powerful insight for me.
I just want to pause here for a moment because I think what Emre is saying is extremely powerful, that we have all these, in a way, very arbitrary divisions and differences that we perceive. But in many ways, those differences are real. Like Emre said, they are taught to us, right? So we learn. But if this podcast is doing something that where you listen to this person and you feel, I'm not that different from this person, I think, yeah, that's powerful.
That's just incredible.
I just wanted to add, I have to say, Emre, your story about Martha was one that absolutely moved me, and it brings tears to my eyes every time. By now, I know every word you say in the segment, but I can cry every time.
Let's listen back to a bit of Emre talking about Marta.
The most uncommon connection I have had in my life was my flatmate Marta. When I was living in Destin, Florida, I was 22 and Marta was 65. We were from different backgrounds, cultural, religious, and professional. Our relationship was much more than just sharing a living space. Our conversations delved into deep topics, often focused on the different worlds we came from. Also, we cooked together. She taught me how to cook meatloaf and I made Turkish-style salad. We helped out each other in difficult times and gave each other some lovely surprises. I remember driving to a Turkish restaurant miles away just to get her some baklava she loved so much. I used to find strawberry pie ready when I came from work. There would be a note with a PS which said, "Just a tiny slice is enough for me." She was not my older American flatmate. She was my Martha. And I was not her roommate from Turkey. I was Emre.
I think my favorite line was, to her, I was just Emre and she was my Martha. I'm like, oh my God.
No. The best line was about I only need a little piece.
I only need a little piece. Just only a tiny slice is enough for me. Oh my God.
just imagine how I felt when I saw this note.
And, you know, you're living in this foreign country. You are wrestling with this language, and we hear these other stories about this stuff that you went through. So to have a place like that, to feel at home, that must have been incredible.
Thank you so much. It was a great opportunity for me to, you know, commemorate her. There are some moments that I really want to talk. And sometimes I just go back to our previous messages on Facebook, on everything. I just feel really, she was maybe one of the best stories that I had in my life. So thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to commemorate her.
So we have talked about hard questions and given a shout out to contributors. And that brings us to part three, Geek Me.
So one thing everyone on the team has in common is that we like to geek out with research. And it's one of the ways that we also find new topics. So let's talk about the research or theories that we are interested in or that we might want to dig into in the next season.
So I found an article related to a psychological bias related to karma. When people are asked to remember an incident that they feel is related to karma, they recall positive things for themselves and negative things for others. And this really struck me. So here's a quote. These karmic attributions also fulfill broader psychological motives to perceive oneself as virtuous and deserving of good fortune, and to perceive other people as recipients of just punishments for their misdeeds. So when I read an article like this, I get all of these questions about the implications of this, not only among people individually, but over a society. For example, could this reinforce social inequality?
But that's the tricky thing, right? On the one hand, it's pretty simplistic to say that one cognitive test can tell us about the society at large. But on the other hand, these biases are real and it's a very natural way how humans react. So yeah, it would be great to dig into a topic like that.
I got very interested in the topic of culture and humor. I found an article about it in a psychology journal. It talks about how not every society sees humor as positive. In China, for example, being humorous is not always seen as positive.
I love this idea of doing an episode on humor and culture. I watch stand-up comedians from different cultures. Maybe we could use clips.
I can definitely recommend Comedians of the World, which is a Netflix series. Go check it out. In my work, I have to change my sense of humor depending on who I talk to. Like the Dutch can have a very dark sense of humor.
In Turkish context, the humor is based on mostly in the language used. So there's always a chance of being lost in translation.
Well, as an American, I have trouble keeping up with British humor, or I feel offended because they're taking the piss and I'm an American who has a different sense for what's funny. So how do we approach a topic like this? I don't know, but it would be really fun to try.
Norwegians and Filipinos have a different sense of humor, but we both share that the American sense of humor doesn't always resonate. There was an American who slipped and fell, and then we laughed and the Filipinos laughed, and the American was offended by people laughing at them for, you know, having slipped at the stairs. But then I thought, me and my Dutch friend thought that because we shared this side of humor with the Filipinos, we thought that pranks would be a good way to tell jokes because we love doing pranks. So me and my Dutch friend, we put a fish, like an unfried fish, a raw fish, in the bed of our Filipino friend.
Oh, just for fun. It did not end well. And oh no.
Leah was not wise to begin with. She appears wise now.
This is her cultural sensitivity, her empathy working. So it didn't go well.
We had to do like a whole making amends, apologizing sort of thing. Yeah.
Buying a new bed.
Yeah. Buy a new bed.
Right? Right? I want a new bed.
Yeah.
Like, right.
Well, that, now we definitely have to do an episode about culture and humor.
Yeah. And there'll be like one part dedicated to pranks. The deep culture of pranks across countries or something like that.
It'll be, it's like the culture fails. Yeah.
Oh my, yeah, that was bad. Anyways. One of the topics I have been fascinated with is tightness and looseness. Norway is considered as a culture with tight social norms, which makes it difficult to adapt to life here. I found a bunch of research, a 33-nation study, surveys where people ranked the acceptability of actions like laughing or kissing in different situations, like in a classroom or on a bus. Cultures where people are rather strict about these things are considered culturally tight. That would be fun to talk about. And Norway is, as I said, considered quite tight.
Oh, is Norway considered tight?
Wow. So Norway is liberal but tight. But India seems like it must be tight.
India is super tight. India, yeah. In fact, all these things that Leah mentions, like public display of affection, and it's absolutely very low tolerance for things like that. It would be an interesting topic to explore.
As an American from probably one of the loosest countries in the world, I'm just curious about how it's measured. It seems like a very slippery concept. So yeah, that's plenty to dig into.
It is a slippery concept, and I can't really fully grasp the research. Like, I'm left with questions even after reading several articles and a book. But what I like is the idea that there's a range of ways of expressing ourselves that is sort of seen as appropriate or inappropriate. In the Netherlands, the range is, it's a loose culture, and probably America as well. So you can behave and express yourself in several ways and people don't look at you as if you're weird. But in Norway, you have to fit into this narrow way of being and behaving and speaking and thinking and dressing. I mean, you won't be excluded, but you might not be able to get connections and gain friends and stuff. And I find that interesting.
So one of the topics that I would really love to dig into is the concept of cultural relativism. It would be interesting to dig into how it differs from moral relativism.
This is something I so often have students ask me about. You know, does adapting to another culture mean that I have to follow everything? Does it mean that I have to agree? Does it mean that I have to accept? That's a great topic.
And where do we draw lines? And where do we erase the lines? And I wanted to explore the idea of childhood across cultures. I was inspired by this book, The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. And the book itself is about how information technology and social media leads to a lack of friction in our lives. On the one hand, we cannot idealize traditional cultures, but we also cannot really ignore the crisis of fractured communities. Jonathan Haidt talks about how the younger generation today does not really have moral frameworks that anchors them. So it will be really interesting to explore that topic.
I think it'd be great if we could do that.
So we've got lots to look forward to. But Joseph, before we finish, how does it feel for you to be finished with season 5?
Well, it's crazy. I recently listened back to episode 1 and it was COVID times and I was feeling really cut off. I had no idea what I was doing with the podcast. But then from the beginning, there were people that were joining in. Yvan Vanderpoel really helped get it going. And then incredible people joined the team. Ishita, you were part of this first expansion. You came in together with Zena Matar and Daniel Glintz. Then Emre came in. Then Liu Liu joined. And then Sane, you came in. And as I recall, Emre, you recommended Leah. So that has been incredible how the podcast itself has had this expanding community. And then there are the listeners, you know, I'll be at some event and someone will say, oh, the Deep Culture Podcast, I love that. So it's so fun. It's family.
So that's about all we have time for, but we will be back for season 6.
The Deep Culture Podcast is sponsored by the Japan Intercultural Institute, an NPO dedicated to intercultural education and research. I'm the director of JII. Thanks to everyone on the team this season. You are amazing. Ishita Rai, Leah, Torhiliana Harskarnes, Sane Bosma, Emre Seven, Liu Liu, Rob Fritz, JII's administrator, Ikumi Fritz.
And thanks to the contributors this season. I have to say this to everyone. Joseph, somewhere in the middle of the season, Joseph deliberately put this part where we thank the contributors to me because it kept having more and more complicated names. And so I would be reaching out to the people saying, can you please record your name and send it to me? It started with Leah. And Joseph just sneakily, like, he says everything himself and then I have to say all these names. So, every time I break into a sweat, it's hard work. So, and thanks to special contributors this season, Adi Putri Verlita Maharani, Armin Gregorian, Bridget van der Grootewin, David Scholz, Katarzyna Grzyk-Hars, Liv Johansson, Luan Borges de Carvalho, Mahel... See?
You are so good.
Yes.
Mael Rolando Caballero Ramirez, Makiko Endo Kimura, PV Satyanarayana Raju, and Safa Abdul Razak. Thank you. Thank you.
Very well done. Teachers, there are free educational materials to use this podcast, ready to take into the classroom. Look on the website of the Japan Intercultural Institute. Click on resources.
This podcast is non-commercial, but we need your help. Please leave a comment on Apple Podcasts, share it on social media, become a JII member.
And if what we do sounds fun to you, if you've got stories to tell, ideas to share, join the team. We are expanding our circle of contributors. To find out more, write us at dcpodcasts@japanintercultural.org.
And finally, as we finish this season, a special shout out to Yvonne Vanderpool, the co-founder of the Deep Culture Podcast, as well as Zena Matar and Danielle Glintz. You made it all possible. Thanks everyone for this incredible season. Okay, let's do what we do at JII. We'll turn on our mics and then we can all thank each other. And we can do it in all of our, can we do it in all of our languages?
All of our languages,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. More than a dozen, right? Okay. 1, 2, 3. Okay, thank you everybody. It's been great.
Thank you.